America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Stuck in traffic and need to vent? Dial the Fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
Call his wife and hey, 406. McMonagle here with you on the Fan. Got you for one more hour. 888-808-1019 on this Monday morning. Rami on the other side, taking your calls until the warm-up show at 5. Big day. Big day. Obviously, still a reaction Monday to the NFL and the disastrous performance the Jets provided. A performance I didn't think this team was capable of. Could they lose? Sure. I suppose they could lose. Would have been out of the realm of possibility that, you know, Sean Payton finally had Bo Nix playing well off of an impressive win against Tampa last week, and they came in here and put up some points to beat the Jets. Wouldn't have expected it necessarily, but possible. I did not expect to have the Denver Broncos score 10 points and win 10-9. I didn't think this offense was capable of being as bad as it was yesterday. I didn't think an Aaron Rodgers-led team wouldn't score a touchdown. I didn't think an Aaron Rodgers-led team could not score 11 points to beat a Broncos team. But that's what we saw yesterday, a pitiful performance. And I put a lot of it on Rodgers because I consider him part of the coaching staff. And coaching had so much to do with yesterday's loss. The penalties, ridiculous. 15, 13 accepted, 15 overall for 90 yards. Pre-snap penalties, post-snap penalties, running into a kick returner. A taunting penalty that killed them from Lazard. But so many things. Not putting in your bigger back, Allen, at the goal line at the beginning of the game when they had an opportunity to take a touchdown and go ahead early. I mean, that's just an idiotic call. I mean, this guy has been a load. He's running the football better all day. Like, get him in at the goal line. I don't understand. And just the offensive game plan that they came up with a week and a half ago, we watched that game against the Patriots where they dominated, where Aaron Rodgers looked like the MVP, where this team looked the part of all the preseason hype that it's garnered. When Aaron Rodgers looked the part, when they absolutely dismantled, where the offensive game plan was good, people were running wide open, and we were praising this coaching staff, at least Nathaniel Hackett part of it with Aaron Rodgers. And Aaron Rodgers is the coach on the field. So we can quibble, and they did, apparently, in the postgame about who's to blame or what's the reason for some of these pre-snap penalties. It's about coaching, and Aaron Rodgers is the coach on the field. And him and Nathaniel Hackett. So when you look at this offense and you see all the pre-snap penalties, it's on Aaron Rodgers and Nathaniel Hackett, as well as the head coach. You talk about how and why, for me, we talk so much about how good Garrett Wilson is and how dynamic a player. And Aaron Rodgers talked about it and compared him to Devontae Adams. And constantly, all the time, the only other one is 17. Oh, he reminds me of 17. Blah, blah. They can't get on the same page, the two of them. In a series they need at the end of the game, he's looking for back shoulder throws and the wide receivers are still running sprints. Like, that's on Aaron Rodgers. That's on Nathaniel Hackett. That's on the coaching staff of this team. And make no mistake, this quarterback is a part of the coaching staff. And it was a hideous performance on multiple fronts. Even the defense. Now, they played well. They gave up 10 points. You can't kill them. They're not the number one reason. But they broke at the wrong time. They gave up a touchdown on a 3rd and 7 when the only passing weapon the Jets have is wide open in the back of the end zone. They had penalties, too. They allowed Denver for a couple series at the end of the game to run the ball down their throat, and the run defense showed up. Despite the fact early on, the quarterback was completely befuddled, was 7 completions for -7 yards at one point, the half. Like, there's no excuse for losing this game, and now it sets them up where, you know, they're coming off a brutal loss, questioning themselves. The offensive line was terrible and got Aaron Rodgers beat up, in his own words, and they got to go to London and play Sam Darnold and the undefeated Minnesota Vikings. This was a game this team desperately needed. Just to continue the good feelings, just as the schedule's starting to get tougher, you need that victory. Just in every aspect, that was a game the Jets absolutely needed. And I don't care if it's raining, I don't care what the circumstances were, you can't lose to that team in that building under those circumstances. You just can't. You can't allow a rookie quarterback who can't get in the end zone for the most part to come in and beat your Hall of Fame quarterback. It can't happen. And so while today I know that Robert Saleh is going to get a lot of the blame, and he deserves it, because we have seen these penalties kill this team before. This is not new. This is not new. And the coaching decision not to put in the bigger back at the goal line still makes no sense to me. There's a bunch of scenarios of this game that make no sense to me. And the head coach, while I'll tell you, and I have told you that, he's hadn't had a real opportunity to win. He's had miserable quarterback play. He's had some of the worst quarterback play in the NFL over his tenure. It's unfair. I'm not saying he's a great coach, but it's unfair to call him a bad one. And while I'm still mainly there, I haven't made any referendums on this head coach. It's hard to really look at any aspect and say that's where he helps him. That's where he shines. Because defensively to start this year, game one overrun. Yesterday just broke enough. We've seen that historically through this Jets seasons and defenses. Even when they play well, they break at the wrong time and can't come up with stops at the end of games. But ultimately, where does this coach, as much as I'll tell you, I still don't know if he's terrible. I still don't know if he's a hurdle they can't overcome. I still don't know if he's the reason they'll never win. But I'm having a hard time finding a spot where I can say, hey, that's where Robert Saleh helps you. And they better turn this thing around quick, because they're playing one of the best teams in the NFL. And they're not playing a rookie quarterback who sees ghosts. That's a former version of Sam Darnold. They're not playing Bo Nix. They're playing an MVP candidate, Sam Darnold. They're playing throwing 3-4 touchdowns a week, Sam Darnold. So it better figure itself out quickly. Whether it's the cadence or whatever else is the problem with the penalties, that better be the last game we see it. Because this team, amazingly enough, with all the talent, isn't good enough to overcome the same nonsense we've seen over the last few years. We thought they were. Right now, they're not. 888-808-1019. And, of course, the Mets, as they get ready for a doubleheader against the Atlanta Braves, needing one. They will pitch McGill in game one, which is 100% the right move. The Braves are doing the same thing, saving Chris Sale for game two. Mets saving Severino for game two in case they win game one, and you can pitch him in the first game of the wild card and give yourself a chance, with Major League Baseball giving you no room for error, and having, if it takes the second game, if there is a split, the winner of the second game has no one to throw in the wild card. But the schedule's set. The Mets will most likely be in Milwaukee if they split. But they're saving Severino for that game two if they desperately need it, which for me, Met fans, I don't know what your confidence level is. My confidence level would be high, because I can't imagine the Braves. Now, anything could happen. Severino could get lit up whoever's in there is going to try and play hard. But the Braves are not going to pitch Sale. I don't know who they're going to throw. They're not going to pitch any pitcher of any sort of import at all. They're going to save all of their relievers for the next day when they start their playoffs. They're not going to celebrate and then want to stick it to the Mets. I find it hard to believe. The Mets have no excuse not to be a playoff team. Needing one is the best case scenario, really, you could have hoped for. Leaving Atlanta on Tuesday night, knowing coming back for Monday was a possibility doubleheader. Heading in knowing all you need is one and all the Braves need is one is about as much as you could have asked for. And it's a situation that the Mets cannot blow. If they win, it justifies this season. It becomes a great year with a lot of fun memories, coming from behind, being resilient, having a really great year. If they lose, all of that's erased, and all we will remember is the ineptitude against the Atlanta Braves and blowing a playoff spot at the end of the year. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you on the Fan. Let's get to the calls. Danny and Belrose. What's up, Danny?
Hey, good morning, Chris. What's up?
Good morning, buddy. How are you?
Feel pretty good. That blockbuster trade with that Cavs and Knicks is looking fantastic. Oh, my God.
Well, yeah, I mean, listen. No, go ahead. What's your take on it? I'll give you mine in a second. It's been a busy morning, and I did do it on Saturday night, but I'll get to you.
I remember last season, I mentioned that, you know, I like the Cat to the Knicks, you know, and I think you were a little apprehensive, but like, you don't think he's going to be a good fit.
Yes.
But you know what? I'm liking it right now. I mean, the guy averages almost 22 points a game, almost nine rebounds a game, you know, probably about almost four assists, 2.2, you know, 3 points a game.
He's got a good shooting percentage.
And it frees up 35 points with Randall not being traded. I think it's going to be good, and also Hart's going to be having more time now. So I'm liking their chances.
Yeah.
If they don't make the finals this year, then I don't know what to say.
Well, I mean, listen, the Celtics are still a very good team. I don't think this makes them the prohibitive favorite to be in the NBA Finals. It makes them a team that can be. I don't think there's any doubt. I had three initial thoughts when this trade was made. When I first saw the story on Twitter, when I first saw that this trade was going to go through and the particulars of it, I had three instant thoughts. My first one, my very first one, I'm being totally honest, my very first thought when the trade was made was, we will never know if that team last January was as good as it looked. That was my initial thought. My initial thought was negative to the trade. Not necessarily negative to the trade, but just the idea of last year, Randall, OG Anunoby, Brunson, Hart, DiVincenzo, I know iHeart was part of that because Mitchell Robinson was hurt, but that team in January made us believe. And that's the OG Anunoby trade and how instantly, and it started, oddly enough and ironically enough, against Minnesota and Karl Anthony Towns. And they had that impressive win, and they went on this incredible run, and they were playing. They were blowing out teams. They were blowing out Denver. I mean, they were on a roll. And now, with losing Randall and losing DiVincenzo, we will never know, because of the Randall injury, we will never know what that team could have been. That was my initial thought, and how sad it is to see guys go. But again, all of us were sad to see Quickley go and Barrett go. And we were convinced that was a dumb trade. These are pieces you wouldn't even trade for Spider Mitchell. Now, all of a sudden, you're trading them for OG Anunoby? That was the instant reaction. What happened? It instantly transformed the team, which led to my second thought. In Leon Rose, we trust. I mean, just plain and simple, he's done a remarkable job turning this team into a contender as quickly as I ever could have thought possible. He has done an incredible job. And the combination of him and Thibodeau and two minds who are completely melded together. Like that Anunoby trade, I know the Burks and Bogdanovich trade didn't do the same thing. But that OG Anunoby trade, that I got to admit, I didn't know how to think of it in the moment. I got to admit, I didn't know what to think of that trade in the moment. It instantly transformed them into a team that I'm lamenting losing when they traded for a superstar. So, I mean, that's how good that trade instantly made it. So the idea that him and Thibodeau, not only can he go out and get players, But he knows, and him and Thibodeau are working so well together that they know exactly what they want, and then Thibs knows how to go out there and implement it. Like, and he's had a history with Karl Anthony Towns. I don't think he would have signed off for this if he didn't see it working. I don't think this happens unless Thibodeau gives the okay and says, I can make this work. And we all know, and it's been talked enough about now, that the trade was Friday night. Like, Brunson, and we've been talking about it for longer than that because we knew Brunson and Randall are a bit of an issue. They both need the ball. It's not a perfect fit. That team in January was special, but that was before Brunson elevated to even, like, Brunson and Randall together, we saw that Brunson was becoming an all-star, right? He deserved to be an all-star. What a great year last year. He's really becoming special. He's been so much better than we thought, blah, blah. Then Randall goes out, and the rest of the year in the playoffs, he elevated to superstar. He elevated to this is his team. It kind of was a shared thing. And when Randall went out, Brunson elevated to something different. And once that happened, now the fit isn't as good as it might have been. So I understand that aspect of it. It's hard to say goodbye to DiVincenzo, who's so good for them down the stretch. But I do believe the reports that I don't know if he was upset or didn't like the Villanova Knicks as much as other people have. I don't know if that's the issue. The issue is he was freaking unbelievable for them, hitting game-winning shots in the postseason, going down the stretch, taking them, you know, to heights we didn't expect and having great playoff series. And then he's told, well, your role's going to be lessened this year. I'm sure he wasn't too happy about that. Now, that's not a reason to move him necessarily. I think he would have eventually played ball. I don't think he would have been disgruntled to the point where he wouldn't have been effective in his role. But I just think this is a move that I like because GMs don't stay stagnant. And to make this move that clearly makes them better offensively, we know what he brings. He brings the spacing. He can still shoot 3 out of 40%. You know, he's not going to take as many as DiVincenzo, but he helps because he does give you that ability to shoot at a high percentage. You got him. You've got OG who shoots at a high percentage. Obviously, they're bringing in Bridges. Like, they're going to, I think offensively, they're going to be dynamic. The question is this Knick culture with the coach and the point guard strong enough, and Hart, let's not forget Hart, to bring in Cat and get him to be tougher? Because that's the MO, right? That's the MO. The MO is that he's not tough. The MO is that him and Thibodeau butted heads because of defense and because of toughness, and we know, you know, that's the game plan. And I don't think this changes their style of play. I had a caller the other night mention that, like, I don't think they're gonna cater to him at all. He's got to come in here and play Thibodeau and Brunson basketball, plain and simple. He's gonna have to be a better rim protector than he's been. He's gonna have to be more hard nosed than he's been. You bet your ass he better be diving for loose balls. Like, this is who he's got to be now. And the question will be, if this Knick culture and what it's become is gonna be strong enough to get that out of this superstar player. And then the other third thought process I had was, this is a typical, perfectly put, high risk, high reward. I think it raises the ceiling and lowers the floor. That's what I think about this. And in the NBA, you have to go for it. In the NBA, you have to go for the higher ceiling. Because is there a chance it doesn't mesh and it doesn't work and all these new pieces and this elite, talented starting five, like, is worse than what they could have been? Because I think the previous iteration before this trade, there was a level that they were going to be at. Like, you knew they were going to be a top four seed. Like, I felt pretty confident in that. But I wasn't sure how high they could get. I wasn't sure they could beat Boston. I wasn't sure they could be an NBA contender. To me, an NBA Finals contender. To me, now it could be worse than that. It could not work, and it could cause problems and chemistry issues, and the team might not be as good as we thought they would definitely be. But if it does work, the team is better. The team is better. And you have to chase championships, and you have to make the big move, and you can't be afraid of it. And honestly, who else do you trust in this town? Or, I mean, he transformed the Knicks. They've been a barren wasteland for years. You bring in Hall of Fame coaches, they don't work. You bring in the greatest coach in NBA history, it flops on its face. I mean, just, you know, guys who, everywhere they go, they transform organizations. They come to the Knicks, and they're terrible. And this guy, this agent, within a couple of years, has transformed this team. In Leon Rose, we trust. There's no other way to put it. Vinny in Staten Island. What's up, Vinny?
Hey, Chris. What's going on? Good morning.
What's up, buddy? Good morning to you.
Yeah, I don't like this. I mean, I like the move, but I don't like the move because, all right, so you trade Randall, don't care. He was not going to be your future. You trade DiVincenzo, which I'm going to miss deeply, but it weakens your bench because now you're moving Hart to the starting lineup. You have if OG doesn't stay healthy, what do you do?
I think it's
important that when Mitchell Robinson gets healthy, you make the move to try to get at least two pieces that can help you off the bench, because you cannot run these guys 30 minutes in the regular season again like you did in the playoffs, because injuries are going to happen. It's 82 games. You don't even know if Carl Anthony Towns is going to stay healthy, and that's going to be an issue, because I looked at his stats, and yes, he has played over 60 games the past 3 years, and he was dominant last year before he got hurt late in the season. So that right there, to me, when you add somebody like Quality Towns, you're weakening your bench. And that's something that we all thought when they made that Mikal Bridges trade, you made the bench strong because you had DiVincenzo and Rose and Hart coming off the bench.
Yeah.
Now you're taking two pieces out to make this
quality. That's part of the reason why I think, you know, they could be a little bit worse in the regular season or be a lower seed if it doesn't work out. Because you're right, the bench and injuries. And OG obviously has his injury histories. Even Cat, like you mentioned, has injury issues in the past. Who knows when Mitchell Robinson will get back here? I mean, no coincidence that we found out, like, on Thursday that Mitchell Robinson's not going to be back until January, December. And then all of a sudden, boom, this big trade for a five. Which, by the way, when Mitchell Robinson comes back, that contributes to the bench. And at times, you could play him at the five and play Carl Anthony Towns at the four. Like, that's a unit you could throw out there. It's a lot of size. And especially when you're going against, you know, Boston and their size with Porzingis. Like, I think it makes them more dynamic. I think it gives them more options. But you're right, over the course of 82, does it open them to having to play certain guys more minutes and injury and weaken the bench a little bit? I suppose, but, you know, let's be totally honest. No matter the injuries or not, we know what happens come postseason time. Again, you're talking about a load management type thing over the course of a regular season and avoiding injuries, fine. You get to the postseason, you know Thibodeau's rotation is small. Like, that's just, it's how he plays. It's not like, ooh, I've got this great bench, let's use them all. He's not going to do that. He's going to have a very short rotation. They have arguably as good a starting five as there is in the Eastern Conference. And just with the history of what Leon Rose has done and how it's successful, I don't know how you could poke too many holes in it. My biggest thing is I never like running it back. I don't. Typically I don't. But with the injuries and how good they were in January, part of me was excited. Now I know the team would have been different with Bridges and no Ihart, so it's not exactly the same, but I wanted to see with Randall and Brunson and Hart and DiVincenzo and OG. Like, I wanted to see what, because with OG on the floor, they were the best team in the NBA. I mean, the record just with OG, let alone Randall. So part of me wanted to see that just to because it's unsettled. It's unfinished business. But I trust them. I trust them as much as I trust any GM, and that includes Brian Cashman. And that pains me to say. I don't like saying I like GMs better than Brian Cashman. I'm uncomfortable.
I'm just happy you got to work the Yankees in, because it is 4 a.m.
There you go. It's 4:30. 4:28, Yankee hot stove. Today, the Yankees don't have much. I like the matchup of either the Orioles or the Kansas City Royals. I'm glad it's not. I think the two most dangerous teams for me heading in were Houston and Detroit. And I'm glad they avoided them. That's it for Yankee hot stove. Not today. Today, a little bit about that Nick trade. I'll take your calls on at 888-808-1019. Mainly for me, even as disgusting a loss that was, and we want to complain about it, the Jets are 2-2, and they still have Aaron Rodgers, and hopefully they can turn it around. Tough matchup, tough schedule, before it lightens up a little bit after November. But to me, this is a big day for the New York Mets and their fan base. And I just got a couple tweets. How could you say confidence level with the Mets is high? You should. My confidence level is extremely high in the Mets figuring out a way to win one game. Extremely high. There is no reason the Mets should not be a playoff team. No reason. There's no reason they should not be heading to Milwaukee. The Braves are going to have nothing to play for. They're going to celebrate in between. They're going to have Severino on the mound pitch, and the counterpart is going to be God knows who they're going to throw out at the Mets. Like, everything on the line, unless they just are the team that we saw on Tuesday night and the team that we saw on Friday and Saturday and tight as a drum, like, it's on the Mets. They have to go out there and win one of these two games, and I think they will. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you. Quick break. Come back. Take your phone call. It's still 5 right here on The Fan.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their 6 pools on 3 different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
And it takes a knee, and the New York Giants are the Super Bowl 42 champions.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
They knock off the mighty Patriots 17-14.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, 4:35, McMonagle here with you on The Fan. You know, it's again, this is a tweet I got. Your level of confidence is high? I've heard your words, and they're all well and good and even make sense. However, I don't believe there's one Met fan out there that has a high level of confidence today. You're a Yankees fan. Impossible to understand our angst. I'm not a Met fan, that is true, and I don't live with the scars on my body, as Joe Benigno likes to say. That is fair. But I am just, I mean, again, we like to talk about history, right? And I understand they didn't play well against the Braves. It was ugly. It was one game. And they followed up by playing awful in the first two games of the Milwaukee series. They bounced back. David Peterson was great in that game yesterday. He's had a remarkable year. One of the many things that have broken so right about this team that gave you all the confidence in the world when you were beating Philadelphia 3 out of 4 heading into that Atlanta Braves series. Now, I don't know how banged up you are. Alvarez obviously hurts his back on Friday night, but not an issue. He pinch hits on Saturday, plays yesterday, but now he left with a tight hamstring. Obviously, Lindor, I think that's another question mark. Like, if here's another question about the lineup, if you're going to get into all these scenarios. And it was asked of Lindor, do you feel confident Lindor can play back-to-back games at shortstop? In the same day, can Lindor play 18 innings at short? Now, he was moving fairly well. He hit fairly well, hit a home run in this game, stole, I believe it was 2 bases I thought I saw. I know I saw the one in the first inning. Excuse me. So, I don't know how good you feel about him physically. Swinging the bat, okay. I don't know how he's moving around. Can he play short for 2 games? If not, which game do you play him at short? To me, it's not putting my eggs all in one basket, necessarily. But any key decision I have to make, I have game 2 in the forefront of my mind for it. If I feel that Lindor can only play shortstop for one game, and I feel like that's important because I want a different lineup without Acuna in it, then I play Lindor shortstop in the second game. If I have a reliever that I don't feel good about right now pitching in two games in the same day, whether it's Maton who's pitched two games in a row now, or it's somebody we don't know who's dealing with something that all teams go through that they don't tell us, like whatever question marks Mendoza has, for me, I am siding on make sure the second game I'm at my strength. I think that's how you have to handle it. I'm not saying you give up the first game. You battle, you know, go out there and win. McGill can win a game. McGill's pitched really well. This entire pitching staff has pitched really well. Tossing McGill out there isn't giving up. They're doing the same thing. I know Schmallenbach is better than McGill, but they're not pitching Chris Sale to go out there and win game one. They're saving him. It's 100% the right thing to do. Everything should be predicated on making sure I'm at my best for game two. That's how I would treat it. If I have a lead in game one, I do whatever I have to protect the lead, no doubt, because I don't want to play game two. Anything could happen. Severino could be terrible. So if I have a lead, I'm doing what I can. I'm going balls to the wall to win the game. That's without question. But other than that, every single question mark, every single, do I really want to use this guy here to protect the deficit? Like, I don't know. I'm not treating this game like a must win. I'm really not. I'm not managing it like a must win. You know why? It's not. Game two is a must win. So if I know I've only got Maton for one of these games, I'm not pitching him to secure a two-run deficit. I'm not pitching my guys to try and keep a deficit where it is so I can give my offense a chance. I'm not. I don't think you can. I think you have to play this as if game two is the must win. And if you win game one, great. Now you have Severino lined up for the game one of the wild card in Milwaukee. Or possibly San Diego if you end up beating the Braves in game two as well. And I thought I was just saying either or with both teams. If I misspoke, I'm sorry. The Atlanta Braves will not play the San Diego Padres. The Atlanta Braves will either play Milwaukee or they will be out. I mean, I'm sorry, vice versa. The Atlanta Braves will not play Milwaukee. They'll either play San Diego or they won't play. They'll either be out. So they're going to San Diego, and most likely the Mets are going to the Braves, to Milwaukee. 888-808-1019, but that's how I treat it. Game one is up for grabs. I go try and win it. If I get the lead, then I go out there and put my best foot forward and try to win the game. But if not, I am making sure that I do not have an issue in game two. I am making sure I don't have a reliever that I have to question. I make sure that I feel good about my lineup. I make sure I feel good about my banged up guys. I make sure that game two is the game that I know I'm putting my best foot forward with my best possible pitcher. That's what I'm doing. Butch in South Yonkers. What's up, Butch?
Hey, what's up, Chris?
What's up, buddy? How are you?
What do you think of... Yeah, what do you think about Rizzo's hang? Think he's going to be ready to play next week?
No. Huh? I don't think Rizzo's going to be in the ALDS. I suppose there's a chance he's in the ALCS. It's a devastating injury. It really is. It's bothering me a lot.
Yeah.
It's terrible timing. It's worse than losing Nestor. It's worse than even losing Cousins if they've even lost him. Cousins sounds optimistic he'll be back. This team, it just isn't very good defensively. Like, that's just part of it, right? We know that. That's one of their flaws. If we talk about it, no team is great in this league. Every team has flaws. One of the main Yankee flaws, and thank you for the call, Butch, one of the main Yankee flaws is their defense. Right now, if they play Dominguez in left field's a major option, a major obstacle and problem. We know he just has been dropping fly balls. I mean, I think he's capable and he's got the speed to get to anything, but a little unfamiliar in left field, although he's played plenty of it. Like, that's a misconception, too. I know people say, oh, they're playing Dominguez out of position. Yes, he's typically a center fielder, but I believe he's played like 68, 70 games in the minor leagues at left field. It's not like he's never played the position. He's just been bad. And we know Soto is an experience out in right field. And then you get to the infield with Rizzo. Gleyber Torres is athletic enough and good enough to make every great play at second base. but he's so in and out and leads the league in errors at second base that I don't have a lot of confidence in him. I think shortstop Volpe is strong, but his weakest part is his arm strength. And Jazz Chisholm has been flashing signs of brilliance at third base to the point where you could see, I wouldn't be surprised if he wins gold gloves at third base, but it's year one. It's half a year one. And while his arm strength is unbelievable, he's thrown a couple in the dirt. It's a throw he's not overly familiar with. And Rizzo, while struggling at times offensively at the start of the year, has been brilliant defensively since coming back from the broken forearm. Brilliant. And they need, you can't have mistakes at first base. And offensively, he was hitting a little bit. Really showing no signs of power necessarily, but he was putting the ball in play. He was having decent swings. I felt decent about his offense. Not great, decent. I don't know if they, and again, Ben Rice comes up and plays yesterday. I don't know if Ben Rice is going to be the guy. I think Oswaldo Cabrera has earned it for me, where I would probably let Oswaldo Cabrera be the first baseman. I think defensively, they're probably awash at the position. We saw a play where he was unable to get the flip to the pitcher, Ben Rice, in this game yesterday. So I think Cabrera is just as good defensively as Ben Rice, and he's shown more offense at the major league level at least this year. And even with Cabrera, I don't think the offense is that much of a drop-off from Rizzo. It's the defense. It's that confidence in a ball in the dirt's going to get scooped up. It's that confidence on a hard ground ball in the hole, make the play, toss it to your pitcher covering. Like, those are things that he's just unfamiliar with. And I think it's a big injury, and hopefully it doesn't come back to bite them. And I guess there's maybe a chance that he could play in the ALCS. I guess it's a matter of pain tolerance. How do you swing a bat with broken hand?
Feel like when Matt Carpenter was forced into some at-bats in the CS a couple years ago.
Right, exactly right. I don't want to force him in there where he's not capable of hitting. I'd rather see Oswaldo Cabrera. But it's a tough injury for the Yankees, no doubt. It's one that is unfortunate, and I really wanted no part of. I felt good about Rizzo being back at first base. It was one of the things I felt good about. Plus, let's just be fair. I mean, you know, he's won a championship. He broke a 100-year streak with the Cubs. I mean, there's something to be said. Not many guys on this team, if any. I don't know if any have World Series rings.
Oh, well, does Cole?
No.
No, he was
with the Astros in 19, but he didn't win. He lost the World Series to the Nationals. So I don't know if there's anyone on the team. I'm trying to Stroman, no, obviously. I don't know if there's anyone
Soto,
on this team.
Obviously.
Oh, all right, idiot. Yes, thank you. Soto, I just said the Nationals too in 19. Yes, Soto's won a championship, but Soto's just so damn good. But he needs to stop getting thrown out at second base. Good grief. I don't want to get into it now. We're too busy. But man, oh man, when the world's best hitter is hitting behind you and you have two outs, unless you can bear crawl to second base, why would you risk getting thrown out? For what advantage? You're gonna take the bat out of Judge's hands if you get to second base. And they might walk him anyway and just gift you the bag. It's the second time. He's done it a bunch. He's been safe. But he's gotten thrown out twice now trying to advance to second base with two outs with Judge up. It drives me absolutely bonkers. 888-808-1019. All right, quick break. Come back, rapid fire style. Jets, hideous loss. Aaron Rodgers, a major part of it for me. Coaching, clearly a big part of it. But just a performance you can't have, and I don't care about the weather or anything else. Ugly performance from the New York Jets, and the Mets play two later today to decide their fate. And I, for one, am positive. I would find it very hard to believe this Mets team would lose both of these games. So hopefully the Mets are dancing tomorrow in a playoff against Milwaukee. The Yankees will take on either Baltimore or Kansas City on Saturday. So it's still pennant race baseball. And boy, is it fun. 888-808-1019. Your call's next.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
It'll be a 1-1 to Judge. The pitch swung on and hit. Deep center field. Trout on the run. Aaron Judge, number 50.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
And, you know, it is Yankee Hot Stove. So just to talk about Judge there for a second in that promo, You could argue Judge just had the greatest single season any right-handed hitter has ever had in the history of baseball. That's how good this year was. That's how good he was. And if you look at it, considering the numbers around the league are down offensively, I mean, that's why the Yankees have to go win this freaking thing, because this guy is such a generational player. He's so freaking good. But that includes him being that same player in the postseason. 888-808-1019. Let's get to the calls. Richie in Queens. What's up, Richie?
Hey, Chris. Good morning.
Richie!
How are you?
What's up?
You know, I get up in the morning.
Do you
morning,
get that a lot from La Bamba, the Richie scream?
Yeah, I do. I've been around so long, I've gotten everything.
I'm sure.
That my way. But, hey, Chris, yeah, just real quick with Judge. Yeah, now it's about him in the playoffs. It's about his team. And it seems like it's more like on him to a certain degree. It's mm-hmm. unfortunate. It's not one individual, but the year he has to produce. He cannot do a 3-for-19 or something.
Nope, has to have a big series.
And I know it's up against better pitching, but again, he's got to come through. Real quick with the Jets. The Jets are not supposed to lose games like that.
No, 100%.
It's not with Rodgers.
Flat out. That's as good a way to put it as any other. The Jets, have a level of play that should not allow them to lose games like that.
No, and again, with him, I know 2-2 going to Minnesota seems like they're for real at this point. 4-0, they're going to be next week. He looked a little banged up at the end. Mm-hmm. I'm not sold. I know Wilson's a good receiver. I'm not going to put him in the elite top 10.
We expected them to just hit the ground running. They talk about each other so much, and Rodgers talks about him so much. And I know he came out after game 2, I think it was, and said, you know, right now, these defenses are just out to get, you know, make sure that he's not involved in the offense. And then I guess after this game, Breece Hall said that, well, you know, defenses are out. I'm their number one reason. I'm the number one thing they're trying to focus and stop. Like, well, one of you is wrong. And Garrett Wilson needs to be better. There's no doubt. They need to figure out a way. Because right now, let's be honest, big play needs to be made. It's in this game, and it feels like Lazard or Mike Williams are the guy he's going to. It's a problem.
When you're a great player, you got to find a way to be great.
Yeah.
And real quick with the Mets, I thought Lindor was great yesterday. He set a precedent. What he did to steal those two bases.
Yeah.
I know he's still hurting. He said, "Hey, I'm a guy. I'm the leader of this team."
He is.
By the way, Chris, Alonso is beyond pathetic.
Yeah.
Just beyond pathetic.
No, I mean the other.
And, it comes down. And it comes down to this game. Obviously, doubleheader. I mean, best scenario, somehow win the first game, save McGill for game one, and then you've got Manaea for game two.
No, Severino.
So,
Severino for game one and Manaea for game two.
No, I'm talking about, Well, who's going to start? Is it going to be McGill the first game?
Yes.
Today? Okay.
Yeah,
so then you'd have Severino.
Which is 100% the right thing to do. I totally agree with it.
Yeah, and one of those two teams are not going to play the first. Like, if Atlanta wins the first game,
right?
Obviously, they're not going to pitch Schellenbach in the second game.
Well, Schellenbach's starting.
Schellenbach is starting the first game.
They're saving Sale for game two.
You wouldn't see Sale in the second game. So basically, it should look like it's going to be. Before the game,
I know people are suggesting. Yeah, I know. Listen,
it's a split.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how they would do that. I would be so afraid. Okay, like if someone came to me and said, "All right, let's guarantee ourselves a split." Okay, I'd be like, "Okay, you forfeit the first one." I don't know. What are you gonna? How do you do that in baseball? It's weird. Everyone's suggesting that because if you remember a couple of years ago, the Raiders and Chargers played that game where they were tied late in the game, and both would have made the playoffs if they tied. And instead, right, what happened? I forget the circumstances of it. Somebody called a timeout or something happened and ended up setting them up for a field goal, and the Raiders kicked the field goal to win the game, and the Chargers didn't make the postseason. But, they're not gonna have some sort of backhanded thing. Hey, because again, if I'm the Mets and the Braves approach me, like, hey, what do you say we do this split? Let's just scratch, you scratch my back, I scratch yours. I'd be like, okay, you scratch first. Let me win the first game, and then, yeah, I'll let you win the second one. But that's not going to happen. But, yeah, I think there is no way that the other team should win the second game. The loser, There's no way either team should. It should be both of them. It should be Mets going to Milwaukee, Atlanta going to San Diego. There is the. And by the way, like, I'm sorry. Neither of these teams, I don't consider it backing in. I know the Diamondbacks had an opportunity and they blew it. And they absolutely blew it. And I know the Mets haven't played well the last, you know, four games. The Mets played well enough to earn this position. They deserve to be where they are. They've played well for a long freaking time. They deserve this. And the Braves, same thing. They've dealt with a million injuries. They deserve to be here. And a split, I just can't imagine the other team losing. I can't imagine winning game one and giving a damn about two. And I know that the Milwaukee had nothing to play for, and Kansas City, who beat the Braves yesterday, had nothing to play for, and San Diego, who beat Arizona 2 out of 3, had nothing to play for. Those are completely different situations. Those are teams still, like, fine-tuning. They've clinched a while ago. They're getting ready. Like, they still got to, they're going to go out there and play a little bit. Fine. This is not the same as literally clinching. Like, I wonder if they're going to celebrate in between games. They might have a champagne celebration in between these two games. I don't know if they'll save it for after or whatever, but that exhilaration of finally clinching and then going to play another game, I just doubt it very much. Richard in Manhattan, real quick before the end of the show. What's up, Rich?
Chris, you're 100% right. I'm going to go even more up on you. More. It's guaranteed to be a split. If anything else, it's crazy. Now, Atlanta's saving Seattle for the second game.
Yes.
If they lose the first, correct?
Correct.
I would say this. I'm probably wrong, but I swear to God, this is how I feel. They don't have to beat Sale to beat the Mets if they lose game one. The Mets are going to send out their Triple-A team.
Yeah, you can't take the risk. Same thing with the Mets, right? You can't just make the assumption. Because they don't have any. They've been pitching guys this whole. I don't even know if they have another starter they'd feel good about. You can't make the assumption. Oh, I'll just throw at anybody and win because the Mets won't care, or vice versa, and save my ace for, or save my good pitcher for game one of the wild card. You got to go out there and pitch your best and make sure you win that game. You have to. Could they win without him? Sure. Could the Mets win game two without Severino, considering what the interest will be from the Braves? Yes, but you can't take the risk. That's it for me. Everybody, enjoy this doubleheader. It's a lot of fun. Pennant Race Baseball is fun. I'm out of here. Bye-bye.
Sports Radio 101.9 FM. The Fan. WFAN New York.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.